Hello everyone and welcome to episode 340 of the Mark and Me podcast. As always, I'm your host Mark. Now this is an interview that's actually quite old now. I recorded it at the end of October last year, had full intention to release it as always straight away. The file got corrupt, it was an absolute nightmare, but after some serious hard work and editing, I've now got the file saved and it's ready for you guys to listen to. So I'm thrilled to announce that after all this time, on today's episode, I'm joined by the singer from Knuckle Puck, Joe Taylor. Joe is an absolute great guest, so much energy, and I just absolutely love this interview. So really, what I want to do now is to get straight to it. It's been an actual 6 month wait for this interview, and I don't want to make you guys wait any longer. So here's me and Joe talking all things Knuckle Puck. So Joe, welcome to the Mark and Me podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure, my friend. What I love to do with all guests that come on the show is take it right back to the very beginning. So when you were a kid, maybe a young teenager, what was that first album that you remember buying either with your pocket money or was handed to you that made you fall in love with being in a band?
Oh, man. So I was at my buddy's house and I didn't have cable growing up. And MTV was on and there was a music video of the song Down by Blink-182.
Great tune.
And my cousin worked at an old store called Circuit City. And I said, hey, like, could you get me a Blink-182 CD? So she got me Enema and Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. And I listened to both of those albums front to back. And if you know Blink-182, you know that Down is not on either of those records. So nope. I fell in love with that band and I wanted to be in a punk rock band.
That's awesome. What age were you at this point?
Oh man, probably like sixth grade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fifth, sixth grade. I had heard like the singles, you know, I had like gotten into punk rock music and rock music before that, but like that was the moment where I was like, oh, I want a guitar.
Yeah. I want to be like Tom. I want to have a nice blue Fender Strat and just fucking rock out. The thing is with that band, they're so influential and it's scary that they're kind of like, they've come back now even stronger. You know, I saw them a couple of weeks ago in Birmingham in the UK and now they've announced even more dates and they've just done the festivals and it's like all these new fans discovering them again. And it's like, where were you 20 years ago? It's crazy. Like they've had such a great life, but it now feels like they've just hit the reset button. It's amazing.
Well, yeah. And I feel like, sorry, excuse me. When they were big, like huge, obviously when, you know, they had all the singles out, I feel like music was a lot different then. You know, you could be like, oh, I love this band and only know the four songs that are on the radio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, people would go to shows and only know those songs. But now music is consumed a little bit differently, I feel like. So it's giving people a fresh opportunity to, you know, be reintroduced to a band that they thought they loved back then. And, you know, they find out they still do love it, you know.
So what about live music? Because I was very lucky, and I said this too many times on the podcast, but I was very lucky that one of my first ever gigs was to see Green Day on their Dookie tour. You know, imagine like a 12, 13 year old me going to see Green Day. It was unbelievable. And I wondered if your first gig was as cool or if it was embarrassing and you don't tell people, but what was that first kind of memory of a live performance that made those hairs on your neck stick up and just make you think, fucking hell, this is what music's all about?
Oh man. In seventh grade. Okay, also, when I said sixth grade earlier on the Blink thing, it had to be earlier than that, probably like fourth or fifth. But seventh grade, I went and saw Angels and Airwaves, Taking Back Sunday, Automatica, The Subways in Chicago.
Wow.
So that was like my first show, like real, real show that I was like, I know these bands. I'm so stoked, you know.
And Automatica are a band that I miss so much. I wish they would come back over here and play.
Dude, I just saw them at Riot Fest.
They're so good. I'm just hoping they're like, yeah, let's go back to Europe. Let's play some shows because they are so, so talented.
Agreed. Agreed.
So was that the kind of point when you knew you wanted to be in a band, or was it a bit later on? Because obviously you've been in the band for quite a long time now, like 13 years.
Yeah, like 11. I think we were just at 11 or 12, something like
Okay.
that.
So were you in like college bands or like Battle of the Bands stuff during like college and stuff, or was it like that you basically start with Knuckle Puck as your first main band?
Yeah, I never did like talent shows or anything. Like nobody at school even knew I played guitar, except for like a few of my friends. But they didn't play music. So I would, I had a homie in high school that I would like jam around with, and we like tried to start a couple bands. But yeah, Knuckle Puck is like my first real band that played like shows.
How cool is that though? Because a lot of the artists I speak to that are in successful bands now went through three or four bands, so many different lineup changes. But like your first proper band is the band you're still writing and releasing albums with today. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of cool, and honestly, I would credit that a lot to us being really good friends. Like
Yeah.
when we built the band at the end of high school, and it started with me and our drummer John, and we were both very like, we need to find people that we get along with, that we think are fun and funny and are also decent at their instrument. Like, we had jammed with a few people that were incredible at their instrument, but maybe like we couldn't hang and laugh as much as John and I could. And even that in itself feels amazing because we know so many bands that this guy leaves or that guy leaves, or like maybe the whole band is kind of new people, but I just credit that to us being friends, and it feels amazing.
And do you kind of, I know it's hard to go back all those years now, but when you formed, did you kind of have any expectations? Did you have any like dreams as a band of what you wanted to do? Was it like, we want to play at Riot Fest, or we want to play at Slam Dunk, or we'd just love to have a first album out? Because I know you started by releasing a number of EPs when you first started, didn't you?
We honestly, it started when it started, we just wanted to play like basement shows and just rock. And
Keep it simple.
honestly, and that's kind of why we did EPs, because I don't think we had like a large expectation of, we never thought like, hey, look, we want to play Riot Fest, or I don't know. Not that we didn't think we could, it just, we weren't aiming for that. And I think that's why we did so many EPs, because it was just kind of like, oh yeah, this is cool. The shows are getting a little bit better. Okay, let's do a few more songs. And then it got to the point where it's like, oh, we have to do a record now.
Was it just the fact that you'd run out of EPs and thought there's too much material here, we have to make an actual debut album?
No, it was because the shows kept getting better.
That's
And we
awesome.
kept and we kept getting like cooler offers to do more things. So it just made sense to make an album. And like before, it did not make sense to us to make an album.
I suppose it must be weird as well, because were you noticing the crowds getting bigger quite quickly? Were you like, okay, we're going to play this basement show, and suddenly, you're supporting a band, and then it's like, hey, it's our time to be the kind of headline slot, and then get someone to support us, and then, hey, this room seems busier tonight, and we sold a few, more EPs.
What gave it away for me was when those like small shows started getting a little like dangerous. Like
Yeah.
we did a basement show in Chicago with Modern Baseball in like 2012, and I remember being at that show and being like, yo, this, both of these, like us and Modern Baseball, we should be playing in like a venue right now, because this is it was not, I don't want to say it was dangerous, but there were a lot of friggin' people, and it was like, it should probably be in a venue.
So I suppose, was there a point, obviously you had these EPs, you were doing these venues that were really busy, really rammed each night, then you had to do your album. Was there a point when you felt like there was a bit of a movement that you kind of felt like people are really starting to take note of your music and it felt like you kind of made it?
Yeah, I mean those first 2 years of Warped Tour that we did, that was when the first year of Warped Tour was when we put out our first record, Copacetic, and that I would say that was the tour that we really saw our crowds get bigger over the summer, just from people, hearing about us and being like, oh, we should go check it out. They just put out an album, and then even the next summer on Warped, we could see and feel the band really attracting more people to the stages and watching us play and stuff.
I suppose, was it, because I don't know the whole history of band, obviously over 10 years is quite hard, but was there like a main support that you'd won that was then the moment for you to be like, okay, now we've got to start winning crowds over, we've got this opportunity? I mean, with the Warped Tour, people go for a number of bands, so there's an opportunity to win fans, but was there any main kind of support slots that you had won that were a great opportunity for you to win new fans?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our first tour that we ever did was with Neck Deep
That's
in the
awesome.
US. So that was our first full US. And that was kind of some small venues and a lot of DIY spaces. And then after that, we did like Man Overboard, which was our first full tour of real venues. After we did the first Warped Tour, also, No, right before we did the first Warped Tour, I'm sorry.
That's cool.
We toured with The Maine and Real Friends.
Yep.
And that also was a very good tour. We've been very grateful to do a lot of tours that have helped us out
I mean, the thing is, you
in
have
that
to work
regard.
hard, don't you? In those early days, you need to never kind of turn down a show. If someone says, do you want to come and play this basement, or do you want to come on the support slot or play with Neck Deep, you're going to snap their hand off and just want to be out there playing it.
Of course. And we've always felt a responsibility, especially when we're supporting a tour, to really pull our weight. Like, hey, if we got, only 30, 40 minutes, let's make a move. Let's get them warmed up and get them excited for the rest of the night, because the rest of the night is going to be so fun too, So we've always wanted to pull our weight in that regard.
And you said a few times that you love your bandmates and they're like your brothers and you've got this really tight unit. What is it that you think has kept you so strong? The fact that you've got a brand new album out now and you still love what you do? Because some bands just do it then for the money and they just go on stage and you can see they're just doing it as like a routine. Next night they hardly talk to each other, they go on stage, they pretend they love each other, come off, don't speak. But you guys are genuinely like brothers.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean it all goes back to us really caring about building a band and a unit of friends. And when you're friends for that long, you go through your ebbs and flows. Like, I don't go over to Kevin's house every day, but I love Kevin. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Like, when we tour, it's like the best vacation with your brothers, and then you get to go rock every night. And I don't know, we just have a good support system. If someone's stressed out, we can like talk about it or just like acknowledge it and be like, oh, we know Joe's not having a great night. He's feeling a little sick, And it's I don't know. There's like a level of respect and communication, and just we're just homies, man.
That's good though, because I suppose you don't need to test it, do you? If people know with that mutual respect for each other, look, he's having a bad night, he's not quite feeling it today, don't give him a hard time, just let him be who they need to be for that day, and then you'll come back together anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, hey, my voice is a little shot. Can you take an extra couple lines?
Yeah.
Never a problem. Where I know, like, some bands, not like anyone specifically, but that could be an issue.
That's good, man. It's a healthy way to be. And I suppose if you're going to be completely honest with me, do you still get really nervous being in this band, even though you've done it for over 10 years? Do you still look at these shows when you go out there and feel like, oh my God, like we really need to put on a good show tonight? Or do you feel like you've done it long enough that it's in your blood and your system now?
I definitely get nervous. I definitely get butterflies,
Yeah.
you know? But I feel like in the back of my mind, there's a confidence of like, just kind of go do what you do. Go, let's do what we do.
And talk to me about Losing What We Love, because this album for me, 11 songs, absolutely awesome. I've had it for a couple of weeks. I've been playing it on rotation in the car, and it's just fucking beautiful. Like the production of the songs, it's only like under 40 minutes, but it feels like you've done everything you can with that time. There's no filler. And I suppose it must feel really good that you're still putting out your best music and you've not kind of just gone, ah, well, this'll do.
Well, thank you for saying all that. I mean, it feels great, man. And like I said, you know, relationships go in ebbs and flows, and like we're all friends and we'll always be friends. And we on this record, we really saw the songwriting, like the creating of the record was a lot different than it's been in the mostly recent ever.
Yeah.
Like this is more back to like how we were writing the EPs when we didn't realize we were writing EPs, if that makes
No,
sense.
of course, definitely.
It was so much more jamming and collaborating and being like, oh, hey, I have this idea that I'm like excited about. Let me show you. Because when we were doing our other records, like the full lengths, it kind of got to a point where one person would go in one room and try to make most of a song and have a vision. And that kind of, you know, that can block other people from making suggestions or changes. Not that we ever did that on purpose, but you know, it's just kind of the way that things, you know, ended up going. So this feels a lot more like how we wrote the initial EPs, just a lot more collaborative.
I
And
was going to say, do you
I
feel more of like a collective unit? Do you feel like everyone's involved? It's not just waiting on one person to write a really good riff or a melody. Do you kind of feel like you all just magically have that chemistry and come together for this?
Absolutely. I mean, there was one song on this record that it needed like a little guitar solo, and I was playing. Me and Kevin were playing guitar on the song, and I was like, "Okay, let's just go home tonight. I'll write a solo. You write a solo. We'll come back tomorrow. We'll see what's up." We came back tomorrow. He didn't bring solo, but he loved what I had, and so like it just worked out, and like I wasn't bummed. I like what I wrote. You know what I mean? So, you know, and with that being said, he was probably writing a lead to another song that he was recording in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just really nice to all
It
be.
feels like there's no time for egos in your band. You just kind of, you're a family, you're brothers, you have a job to do, but at the same time, it's all about having fun and loving and respecting each other. And if you can get to party every night, put on shows as a job, then all of you are living the dream.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where do you want to take the band next? Because now you've got this album, obviously, for the rest of November and December, you guys are really busy touring in America. But is there any talk of coming over to the UK or Europe or trying to get some stuff sorted for next year?
I believe we're going to be talking about that, if not this week, next week. Because we were talking about it over the summer, and then rollout for the album happened, so we
Yeah.
kind of stopped talking about it, but I'm sure I will hear about it in the coming days. We are going to come back 2024 for sure.
I feel like you know more that you're not allowed to talk about
No, I truly don't.
right now.
I truly don't. We had an offer to go over, truthfully, we had an offer to go over there. And I don't know what the status of that is.
Yeah. Is that as a main tour
So,
or are you supporting someone?
we would be supporting somebody.
That's exciting.
But I, like I said, I haven't heard about it in like a month.
No. Well, fingers crossed it happens. And by the time this podcast goes out, it might have been announced and then suddenly everyone's talking about it.
It could be. When will this come out?
About a week.
Oh, it won't be announced.
You can tell me off air.
Well, yeah, okay. I just don't know if it's happening,
No,
is
but
what I'm
if it does,
saying.
then it sounds like there's something exciting burning away in the fire that we might get to see soon.
Yeah, keep your ears and eyes peeled.
That's like teasing us all. And I suppose with this album coming out now, is it exciting to start playing these new songs in the set? I know when you're in a band, people pay money, they want to come and see and hear all the big songs, but is it really exciting to get new songs on there, like The Tower, October, Losing What We Love, bringing those into the set list and like as musicians having something exciting and new to play?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We've been playing Groundhog Day for about a year now, and that song even feels brand new. And when we put out The Tower, people were texting me, like my homies were like, "Dude, the new singles are awesome." And I was like, "Singles? I thought we only put one song out." And they were like, "No, it's Groundhog Day song." And I was like, "Oh, that's like a year old. Hell yeah." So, it's great, man. We did a record store, like an in-store in Vegas, and we played Losing What We Love, the song, for the first time, and like people were singing and pitting, and like it is so cool to like get the immediate response, the immediate feedback, the moment you
Something
start
so
str
fresh as well, like you said, like with Groundhog Day, been playing it a year, but then to see people singing back already those lyrics, you must be like, fuck yeah.
Absolutely, man. It makes us all feel so great.
Could you imagine if you weren't doing this band, do you think you could just survive doing something else? Is there something else as a hobby you love, or are you just kind of here to perform and sing and be in a band?
I mean, I love writing and music production a lot. Which just came from the necessity of having to demo my own band. Probably not. I don't know. I don't know what I would do aside from this that's like not music adjacent.
Maybe when you retire, you could just produce bands and sit in a studio all day and just have fun recording other people's bands when you just haven't got the energy to do it yourself.
Dude, I'm trying. I'm building a studio in my basement right now.
Oh, well, there you go. You're not retiring already, are you? That's way too soon.
No.
But as a side hustle, get there, do some gigs, keep doing stuff with the band, but produce other bands. That must be the future.
Yeah, and like I'm in a band with Dan from Real Friends. Sorry, he's not in Real Friends anymore. Sorry, everybody. But we have a band together called Rationale, that Ryan from Knuckle Puck is also in, and I've pretty much tracked all that stuff.
That must be awesome to do it all yourself and not have to rely on an engineer or a studio. You can just literally do it yourself.
Dude, I can take 3 days to record one guitar part. It's amazing.
You're every fucking engineer's nightmare. Producers are listening like, fuck this guy.
Yeah, labels are listening like, "Oh, this record's gonna be too expensive."
That's so good. And are you writing already? If you, even though the album's done, it's out there for the world to listen to, are you already putting pen to paper? Are you kind of one of these guys that's already looking at the future and thinking, do you know what? We want to get another album out there soon.
Well, I never really stopped writing since we did the record. I'm always trying to just jam on my guitar and like come up with an idea for anything, like anything that I think sounds cool. I'll kind of put into different categories. So what I did start working on is a new Rationale record. Dan and I have been kicking some ideas around. I have like a bunch of ideas. So like any of them, if Dan could hear a song and be like, "That's not Rationale, that's Knuckle Puck," which has happened before when I bring him an
I was
idea.
going to say, I was literally just about to say, how do you now determine, now you and obviously another member of Knuckle Puck, how do you kind of say, well, that's for us, or actually that's for the national, like, the rationale? Like, are you like, how do we decide here?
Honestly, Dan usually tells me, like, he'll be like, "That's not a Rationale song, dude. You got to use that for the Knuckle Puck record." And I'm like, "All right."
That's a good position to be in, though. If something's not quite working for one and you think, oh, it sounds a bit more towards Knuckle Puck, okay, we go with that. If not, you know, Rationale will go with that. That's a good place to be in.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. Because
Because
then
then if.
It kind of like removes the barrier a little bit
Well, you don't have any
because
limitations, do you? If something doesn't quite sound like Knucklepuck or doesn't quite fit with that feel or the rest of the band, you can just be like, well, we don't have to let that song go to waste.
exactly. And you know, sometimes I'll sit down and be like, okay, I want to make this Rationale song that's like a little more rocky, but still has this space and this thing that I have in mind when I'm trying to write for that band. And then to have that become a KP thing, it's like I never would have thought that this would be a Knucklepuck song.
No.
Like that Knucklepuck would sound like this. But yeah, so it is cool.
That's awesome, man. I really hope it isn't that long now until you come back to the UK and play some shows.
Same. Yeah, man. I really do think we'll be back in 2024.
What I do on the podcast, and it's my final question for you today, is you get to choose any song by any band as the last piece of music that's played. So, as this episode is all edited and ready for the world to listen to, you get to choose that last song. So, is there a song that you love by someone in the music industry that you just adore that could be played out? And I know it's difficult because there's so many bands and so many songs, but is there just something that you love that wants to be picked that comes to your heart when I ask the question?
Okay, so should I pick like a lesser known artist or
You
should I
can
put.
pick whoever you want, dude. Some people pick B-sides by rare bands I've never heard. Some people pick the most obvious songs in the world, but it's what means a lot to you.
Okay, so because this past weekend I was at When We Were Young Fest, I saw Blink 2 nights in a row, both nights,
Yeah.
the whole set. The second night I watched with my mom, and it's just a glorious moment to see Blink in full form. So I want to say Blink-182, Dance With Me, the new song
Beautiful.
from their new record.
That's all. That album at the moment has been solidly played since last Friday. I know it's only like Tuesday now, but all day, every day. I'm like, it's like a greatest hits album, but all still new and fresh. It's ticking every box for every fan of that band along the 20-year journey.
Dude, I love it so much.
I'm so jealous that you got to see it 2 nights running as well.
Yeah, man, it was good.
How was the festival? The lineup looks too good to be true. I always look at it and think, this isn't real. And then I like,
It
wow,
was
like.
amazing. I saw Say Anything and Fred, who used to be in Taking Back Sunday, was playing guitar with them.
Yeah.
Crushed it.
Oh, wow. One of my favorite bands ever, Thrice, played as well. And I was like, oh, so good.
I met the bass player from Thrice.
Oh,
Very nice
lovely.
guy.
That's cool, man. It's been good to catch up today, dude, and I really appreciate you coming on the show. I will tell everyone I know on this podcast and everybody out there to listen to your new album. I truly believe it's some of your best work, and sometimes bands hit it really hard when they first start out and they never quite top it, but I say this with the biggest compliment in the world. I think your stuff's got stronger, better, the musicianship's got better, you've evolved as a band, and your latest album is your finest hour for me.
Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate that, man.
So there it is. There's my interview with me and Joe. An amazing guy, a great band. Knucklepuck are unbelievable. I've been listening to them loads over the last sort of 6 to 12 months, and I've got this huge, huge amount of respect for them. I can't wait to see them live. I think they're one of the best bands on the scene right now, and I'm so grateful that Joe came on the podcast to talk all things Knucklepuck. Go and check them out now. Go and get a ticket to any of their shows. Stream, buy their album, do whatever you can to support this band. They deserve all your time and respect and love. Also, if you've enjoyed today's episode, as always, please share it. This could be a retweet, a share on Facebook, on Instagram stories, or even just hit that little heart button and give it a like. It means that more people get to see this episode, more people check it out, and more people then jump on board for the Mark and Me podcast. Also, if you want to support the podcast that little bit further, I do have a Patreon account. If this is new to you, what it is basically a way of giving me a tip. Each and every month, what I do with all the money that comes in via Patreon is invest it right back into the podcast so I can go around the country and record more interviews like this one for you guys at home. Not only that, I can host the podcast on Amazon Music, Podomatic, Spotify, and all the different networks out there for podcasts to be hosted on. And what I do in return for your Patreon support is give you a welcome pack, which comes with some stickers and also a very, very rare limited edition badge. But you also get a monthly newsletter. And starting this month, you're going to be getting each and every month, without fail, an episode of The Lost Tapes, which is an interview that never made the final cut for the public, but is exclusive for you guys on Patreon, so for your ears only. And just before I go, I want to give a big shout out to the sponsor of the podcast, Richer Sounds. As always, if you're in the market for a home cinema surround sound system, Sonos, a record player, a TV, go on Richer Sounds and check those guys out. And as always, I'm absolutely snowed under with the amount of edits I've got to do, so expect a brand new YouTube video in the next couple of days, another brand new episode of Mark and Me. So until then, look after yourself, take care, and I'll speak to you all very soon.